Hello and welcome to Nightcap with Jim. I'm the titular Jim, and tonight we'll be concluding our three-part series on the Mission Impossible franchise. For more content you may enjoy, please check out our Morning Mangami podcast and our other social media content at Mangami Players on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, and YouTube. Let's get into it. All right, we begin this episode talking about Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. I really dig Rogue Nation, a lot of it, but there's some stuff that's just a little, still, it's pretty dope. The only, I will say this before I really get into it. I do think that it was kind of just a little bit, having the big stunt with Tom Cruise on the side of an airplane, having that be the opening sequence. I feel like they kind of, blew their wad a little bit, a little too much too soon, because it's like there's nothing that you can really do that's going to top that later in the movie. So, but hey, it's still an epic stunt, and it's still a really great movie. I mean, I love it. Christopher McQuarrie, writer-director on this and Fallout, the guy is just such a good filmmaker. If you don't know who he is, you really need to start paying attention a little bit. This guy's been around for a long time, and he's done some of the most, amazing movies as writer and director. He wrote The Usual Suspects, wrote and made his directorial debut with The Way of the Gun, and I'm definitely going to be doing an episode about that sometime in the future. And just all these other amazing movies. Worked with Tom Cruise previously on Jack Reacher 1. So the guy knows how to do really great action, knows how to write really smart stuff. He's just a perfect fit for the Mission Impossible franchise, and he definitely comes out of the gate, just throwing haymakers. he's just so good at what he does, and it really shows, especially in Rogue Nation, which is a movie that kind of part and parcel with the Mission Impossible franchise, went into production without a script. So, these guys, they kind of do this, they have this, ass-backward way of working stuff out, where they have the action sequences all planned out, but they, they don't actually have, the script with dialogue and stuff, so it's like these guys are writing things and, having to, put the movie on hold and go into a hiatus for a minute to figure out what they've shot already, how that is going to work in with whatever story that they're trying to tell that they don't have, so they have to create it. It's pretty insane stuff, but somehow it works out. Get some new faces in the cast with our latest and I think greatest Mission Impossible lady. I'm actually going to change that. I came up with a new thing, so it's the gorgeous badasses of Mission Impossible. And Rebecca Ferguson is the latest and the greatest. She just kicks ass. I mean, ugh. Amazing. I love Rebecca Ferguson. I'm just a really huge fan of hers. she's done some really great stuff. Rogue Nation and Fallout, obviously, but also Life with Jake Gyllenhaal and Ryan Reynolds. Just really great stuff. Sean Harris is our new villain. Solomon Lane, the leader of the syndicate. Simon McBurney, who plays Rebecca Ferguson, Ilsa Faust's handler for MI6, and Alec Baldwin coming in as director of the CIA and a vocal opponent of the IMF. And of course, returning, we got Simon Pegg, Ving Rhames, Jeremy Renner, So yeah, just really, really cool stuff. this movie really definitely, pushes it to the limit, in so many ways. I mean, just really great stuff. If you don't know, by the way, if you haven't seen this movie yet, the basic story is this. Ethan Hunt, he's been at the end of Ghost Protocol, gets intel that he's got that one of his hunches is correct, and there is this outfit, this organization that's been operating in secret and is, for all intents and purposes, an anti-IMF, called the Syndicate, and it's formed of all, just an international crew of super spies and mercenaries, soldiers, and whatnot, and they're all presumed dead. And they do some really bad stuff. So Ethan wants to go after these guys, but they know he's coming for them. So they set him up, and once again in the Mission Impossible franchise, Ethan Hunt is on the run from his own government and the international intelligence community as a whole. So Ethan really doesn't have the best of luck. A lot of the times, he's once again he's on the run, and he's labeled as rogue. He's disavowed. So he's got a really tough time in this movie trying to work all this stuff out. There's so many great sequences in the movie, and these spectacular set pieces. Obviously with the opening scene and that incredible stunt of Tom holding onto the side of an airplane, which was really difficult to pull off, so they had to make a wind-resistant custom frame for the camera that they mounted on the wing, and then Tom Cruise had to have an eye specialist make him these special lenses that would cover his entire eye, so that he wouldn't get particles, in his eyeballs, and just all this crazy stuff. And I mean, and there's all these dangers too with this kind of a stunt, like bird strikes or particles on the runway. And Tom Cruise actually did get hit with one of these particles, and he initially thought that he was very seriously injured by the thing, but it turns out it just embedded into his clothing. But still, he said it was quite painful. And they're taking him up 5,000 feet in the air, so it's like once again Tom Cruise proving that he is out of his damn mind. I mean, he just this all the stunt work that he does is absolutely insane. Like the driving sequences, he with the car chase with him and Simon Pegg in the car, he they both actually did all their own stunts, and Simon Pegg would. Was told about this by the stunt coordinator beforehand, and the stunt coordinator said, "Yeah, we're just letting Tom do it because I don't have anybody who can drive better than him." But I mean, just Tom Cruise, man, the guy is insanely talented and skilled in so many different fields. It's ridiculous, but it's great because it's like him and Simon Pegg are kind of like BFFs now. It seems like, and that kind of comes through. With this one story that Simon Pegg told, while they were filming this car chase sequence, Tom kept playing this prank on him, where he would turn the seat warmer in the car on, and then and they're shooting in Morocco, and it's 100 degrees or whatever out, and then 5 minutes goes by, and Simon Pegg's like, "Why is my ass warm?" But even with all this amazing skill that Tom Cruise had, he still got injured 6 times on this movie, which is ridiculous. But again, the training that he does is just so insane that for the underwater sequences that he had to film, he trained so hard, so well, so long that he was actually able to hold his breath for up to 6 minutes. Now, if you don't know about holding your breath, holding your breath for 6 minutes, that's something that pretty much only Navy SEALs, special forces guys, or even, and only Navy SEALs are trained to do. And this comes to, again, why Christopher McQuarrie is such a great choice, because his brother was a Navy SEAL. So when it comes to gun handling and making, everybody look realistic in their, in their role, Christopher McQuarrie is definitely on top of that because of his familial connection to one of the greatest special forces outfits in the world. So when you have a Navy SEAL on set that can help you, or in training, you really just get some extraordinary stuff from your actors, and that has come through in all of the films that Christopher McQuarrie has directed. A little interesting bit of trivia about this movie. This is actually the second time that a Daniel Craig Bond film was released in the same year as the Mission Impossible movies. The first time was 2006 with Daniel Craig's first outing as Bond, with Casino Royale, and then this one with Spectre. Now, the James Bond franchise with Daniel Craig is pretty good. But I gotta say, Mission Impossible, since Chris McQuarrie took over, and also Brad Bird with Ghost Protocol, I honestly, genuinely believe that Mission Impossible is just way better than James Bond. Ethan Hunt just, if it's like, who's the best super spy? Ethan Hunt, I mean, Jack Bauer and Jason Bourne and James Bond, they're all well and good and everything, but let's be honest, Ethan Hunt, he's the best. I mean, that's just what I think. I mean, look, here's the thing. I really love James Bond as a character. He's great. I really hope Idris Elba gets cast as the new Bond, because he would be amazing. The gadgets and the cars and blah, 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 blah. But it is a little bit stale at this point, because it's all the same thing. James Bond is never in a serious relationship, so it's like there's not a lot of emotional stuff to mine there anymore at this point, because every movie he's hooking up with some new woman, and that's all well and good for 40 years, but come on, let's evolve the character a little bit, because it's just getting a little boring at this point, because it's just the same thing over and over, villain hooking up with a lady, gadgets, a car, or, an Aston Martin, blah, 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 ugh. I'm over it a little bit, I mean, they're still great movies, but, Spectre is pretty forgettable, let's be honest. Jack Bauer, he's amazing, very similar, him and Jason Bourne and Ethan Hunt, all very similar characters in terms of, most of the time they don't have anybody having their back, except for maybe one or two, three people, and not a lot of technical support or anything like that. Jack's great. Kiefer Sutherland, obviously amazing performance as Jack Bauer. But it is a TV show, and it's kind of difficult to compare the two, especially because 24 is so, stylistically different. In terms of how they tell the story, with 24 episodes, coming with 20, 24 hours. Kind of tough. Jason Bourne, I don't really feel like they hit their stride until the second movie. The first one's good, Doug Liman, he's a great director, but, the first Bourne movie just kind of, for me, a little bit. There's some really good stuff in there, but once you get to the second movie and the third, with Supremacy, Ultimatum, that's where the gold is, I think. But even then, it doesn't really compare to the stuff that, that Ethan Hunt has to deal with. Jason Bourne is never, stopping, a world-ending event or anything like that. It's all very personal stuff. They're all very different characters, but Ethan Hunt has, a little bit of everything going on from all these other from the JBs, the JB super spies. You know what I mean? You know, he's got the gadgets, he's got the tech, he's got the, you know, he's got tech support, he's got, you know, the skills behind the wheel. He's just, you know, he's got that these great relationships that he has that, you know, there's just so much emotional stuff to mine, you know, with, you know, being married and then, you know, his relationship with Benji, who, you know, is definitely like his BFF. And, you know, the same goes for Luther Stickwell, Ving Rhames' character. You know, like he just really cares about these guys. And then with the addition of Rebecca Ferguson as well, you know, there's something there. That's really great. And you know, there's just all this stuff that Mission Impossible has that these other things, you know, only have one or two or a couple things of. But Mission Impossible is somehow able to, you know, combine all that stuff together, and it just makes for, you know, incredibly compelling and entertaining films, you know, but also stuff that can make you think a little bit, like, what if there was an organization like the Syndicate out there, you know? What if there was this kind of thing, this kind of thing, that kind of thing, you know? So it's very, you know, I consider them fairly thought-provoking, but also just wildly entertaining. So yeah, that's gonna do it for Rogue Nation. Stay tuned, and we're gonna be back in a minute with Fallout, Mission Impossible Fallout. So stay tuned. Hey, Nightcap listeners, this is Heath from Morning Mungami, the podcast that you want to listen to start your day off right. Currently, we're doing a three-part series where me and the Mungami players sit down and we talk about the film genre mockumentaries, so you're not going to want to miss that. Tune in Fridays, 8 a.m. Eastern Time, only at Mungami Players, and I mean, it's the best morning show in the world. Why would you want to miss it? All right, now we come to the penultimate, the excellent, the spectacular, the magnificent Mission Impossible Fallout. Just saw it today. Oh my, I mean, this movie is ridiculous. Easily one of the best action films of all time. And I think my pick for best Mission Impossible movie of all time as well. I mean, until the next one, we'll see what happens. So we have a couple of firsts here for this movie. First time we got a returning director in Christopher McQuarrie, who also was the writer on it. And the first time we have a repeat gorgeous badass of Mission Impossible, Rebecca Ferguson. Coming back as Ilsa Faust, which is so awesome. I just love Rebecca Ferguson so much. She's so amazing. She's so cool. She's just she's awesome. And again, a returning villain in Sean Harris's Solomon Lane. So yeah, there we go. We also have Henry Cavill joining the team, Angela Bassett as taking over from Alec Baldwin, running the CIA, since he came over to be the IM to lead the IMF and was promoted to Secretary of State, because, well, that's what we assume, because that's how Brandt, Jeremy Renner's character, addresses him at the end of Rogue Nation, is Mr. Secretary, and Secretary of State is the secretary that the IMF directly reports to. We have the wonderful, the lovely Vanessa Kirby as White Widow, and Wes Bentley later in the film as somebody. Don't want to give it away. Now this movie is genuinely ridiculous, so over the top, but in all the best ways. Tom Cruise really, outdoes himself in terms of stunt work, with just this list of ridiculous things. So, all right, so here we go. We have a halo jump. Now, halo stands for high altitude, low opening, and it's a very dangerous, very difficult method of parachuting, and is just not something to be attempted lightly. And to illustrate that point, it's pretty much only used, it's almost exclusively used by special forces, including and almost exclusively the Navy SEALs. Again, that's Christopher McQuarrie for you. We have a motorcycle chase through Paris and into the Arc de Triomphe, which they only had a very limited amount of time to shoot there, so they had only about like an hour or so to set up the cameras and choreograph the cars that Tom Cruise would be driving against traffic, and only like an hour or so to shoot it. Ridiculous. We have another excellent car chase with Tom Cruise and a passenger. a epic fight scene in the bathroom, where we get that great shot of Henry Cavill reloading his arms, if you will, that we saw in the trailer. We have Tom running across rooftops, jumping from rooftop to rooftop. The final jump being the one where he broke his ankle that we see that we saw in the trailers and we also see in the movie. And then we come to the most ridiculous of all, as if a halo jump wasn't ridiculous enough. we have Tom attempting to board a helicopter mid-flight whilst climbing up a rope. With a payload of stuff hanging underneath, falling off of the rope as he attempts to get a grip on the helicopter skid so he can get inside the helicopter, climbing back up the rope again, getting into the helicopter, taking out two guys, and then taking control of the chopper and flying it himself, all alone, nobody else in the bird but him. And he has to control the camera, work the cameras as well. So just ridiculous stuff. And then we have, and then we have Tom Cruise piloting a helicopter, doing a helicopter chase in the mountains, and going and just so. All right, so for the Halo jump. It was a year's worth of training for Tom to be able to do this stunt. And not only did he have to train for a year doing five jumps a day, one at dawn, three midday, one at dusk, the RAF, the Royal Air Force, had to assist the production in crafting a special helmet so that we could see Tom Cruise's face as he's doing this jump. Which is just ridiculous. and then we have this epic fight scene in this bathroom with Tom Cruise and Henry Cavill, and the target of the investigation. And just this something that was supposed to just take 4 days or so to shoot, but ended up taking 4 weeks. then we have the motorcycle chase through Paris and the Arc de Triomphe, which again didn't have a lot of time to set up, to choreograph, or coordinate, not and less time to shoot. On top of that, Tom Cruise isn't wearing a helmet for it, and there's no safety harness for him, so he's just riding a motorcycle. Against traffic through the Arc de Triomphe. So, then we have this great car chase again. Tom Cruise doing his own stunt driving. I'm sorry I'm laughing so much, but this movie is so ridiculous. Oh my god. Oh, it's just, it's insanity. Oh man. Then we have Tom running across rooftops, jumping out of a building onto another building, jumping onto another building from that building and another building from that one, and then breaking and breaking his ankle. So let me illustrate how ridiculous this movie is. I'm just going to throw some numbers at you, right? So over 3,000 setups. Now, what a setup is when you have decided where you want the camera, and so you know, every time you put the camera somewhere, that's a setup, and then when you move the camera somewhere else, that's another setup. So 3,000 setups. That means that's a lot of camera stuff. 13 helicopters. That's a lot. 6 pregnancies over the course. 5 hiatuses. And I'm sure some of them were because of story again, because of Mission Impossible's history of going into production without a full or even any, without a full and completed or even a partial script. 4 weeks of aerial photography, 2 winters, and 1 broken ankle, and 161 shooting days. That's a lot of shooting days. So this movie is just absolutely absurd on, you know, on every level imaginable, you know, just like almost no digital effects throughout the entire thing, which for a movie that has the kind of stuff that they're doing action wise is ridiculous. Now some of you might, if you've seen it or if you're going to see it, when the Halo jump, because it's not really shown in the trailers at all too much, but there is a lot of digital work in the Halo jump sequence, which might lead you to believe that it's not real. I want to put any concerns about that to bed right now and tell you that the jump was real, but the weather, because they have to drop through a storm, that is what was the only digital enhancement that the sequence has. So it's a real Halo jump. It's a real jump. It's just that, you know, you can't, because there's a lightning strike, and, you know, you can't do that for real. Like, you can't have Tom Cruise jump out of a plane doing a Halo jump and have him get shocked by lightning as well. Like, for one thing, that's weather. You can't control the weather. And two, that's just stupid dangerous. So just some interesting stuff for you about this. The way Henry Cavill got involved with the movie is because Tom Cruise was originally cast to play the role that Henry Cavill took in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. And Tom was just so impressed with his performance as Napoleon that he wanted to work with him in Fallout. And the reason that Tom had to drop out of filming Man from U.N.C.L.E. is because of Rogue Nation. So, you know, kind of some kismet working there, you know? Because I think Henry Cavill did a great job in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. It's a great movie. You should definitely check that out as well. It's definitely one of the really great spy movies made, especially in the past few decades. It's a really great film. Henry Cavill does great in it. You know, just good stuff. We have a throwback again to the first Mission Impossible with Vanessa Kirby's character White Widow, and they never explicitly state it in the film. But when we meet her, she's giving a little speech, if you will, to some people, and she mentions her mother, who is named Max, and who was a lover of paradoxes. And this sounds very much like the Vanessa Redgrave character from Mission Impossible 1. So That's kind of interesting. And she actually does kind of a similar she's has a similar sort of profession as Max from the first film, so the similarities, they're there. But yeah, this movie is just absolutely incredible. It's insane. If you haven't seen it yet, you gotta go see it. And if you have seen it already, I'm almost entirely sure, I'm 100% positive that you should go and see it again. Because it's so amazing. I mean, it's an absolute spectacle. It's magnificent, it's exquisite. It's sublime. I mean, it's like I said, it's easily, handily one of the best action movies ever made, and will remain in the top five, I believe, for many, many years to come. And I'll be honest, like, I'm kind of worried about these guys now, because it's like, what the hell can they do with the next Mission Impossible movie if they decide to make one, because I don't know what you could do to top this stuff. I mean, I mean, I got nothing. I mean, I like to think of myself as a pretty creative guy, but I have no idea what you could do, to top this, unless you have Tom Cruise literally flying a fighter jet. You know what I mean? I mean, like Tom Cruise actually flying a fire jet, like just going full on Maverick from Top Gun for realsies, and that's one thing maybe. Maybe they have like a actual submarine something or other, like they did in The Fate of the Furious, only they actually do it with a real submarine for reals. I don't know. I don't know, like probably some motorcycle thing where he does some Evel Knievel type shit. Yeah, I don't know. Like, what could you? I mean, Tom. I mean, just the Halo jump would be enough. Just Tom hanging onto a rope, dangling underneath a helicopter would be enough. Just him flying a helicopter by himself would be enough. What can they do now? What can they do next? I don't know. I mean, because that's what Christopher McQuarrie, he said in an interview, like, when coming up with these stunts, is he just was like, okay, I'm just going to come up with the craziest stuff I could possibly imagine to see if I can get Tom Cruise to say no to something. And Tom just was like, no, yeah, let's do that. Chris comes and says, hey, you want to do a Halo jump? Thinking like, I got him. There's no way he's going to want to do a Halo jump. Tom's just like, yeah, let's do it. Chris is like, hey, let's do a motorcycle chase through the Arc de Triomphe in Paris. And, like, I got him on this one. Yeah, let's do it. And then they show up to do it, and it's like, oh yeah, we only have like an hour to set it up, an hour to shoot it. We have no safety harness for you, and you're not wearing a helmet. And then Tom's still like, yeah, let's do it. He's like, hey, you want to do a rooftop running scene? Jump from building to building? I got him on this one, guys. Yeah, let's do it. And then I'm sure Christopher McQuarrie was like, all right, guys, check it out. There's no way he's gonna go for this one. So, Tom, I want to dangle you from underneath a helicopter on a rope. You're gonna climb up the rope to try to get in the helicopter. Then you're gonna slip and fall. And then you're gonna have to climb your way back up. And then you're gonna get in the helicopter. And then you're gonna fly the helicopter in a helicopter chase. And Henry Cavill's gonna be hanging out the door of the other helicopter with a machine gun shooting at you. What do you think about that? And then Tom was like, yeah, let's do it. And Chris was just, I imagine Christopher McQuarrie was just like, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? Oh, just ridiculous. It's just absurd. It's absolutely absurd. Actually, I think I'm going to save that for a different podcast. Because I did want to say something about the ending, but I don't want spoilers. in this episode. So yeah, we'll save that. We'll put that. I'm gonna put that in my back pocket, and we'll save it for another time. Oh man, I just love these movies so much, you guys. I mean, they're just amazing. Before I go, I think I'll really quickly rate these movies in terms of how much in terms of favorites. So Fallout, number one with a bullet, hands down my new favorite Mission Impossible movie. Then I'm gonna go with Ghost Protocol. Then I'm gonna go with Rogue Nation at number three. Mission Impossible 2, number 4, and Mission Impossible 3 at number 5, and Mission Impossible 1. Now I'm gonna go back up the list, and I'm gonna tell you why. Mission Impossible 1 is not very watchable to me. I rewatched it for this podcast, and honestly, I probably won't watch it again unless I do another Mission Impossible marathon. But even then, I really don't need to watch it again. I can skip it, you know. It's a good movie. It's just not the. It's kind of, you know. It doesn't hit me where I live. Mission Impossible 3 is again a good movie, but you know, there's just, I'm not really a fan of the nighttime photography. You know, I mean, that's J.J. Abrams' style, and I like his style, but I prefer it more with Star Trek and Star Wars, because it doesn't really fit within the, you know, the visual style of Mission Impossible. So there's that. But other than that, it's pretty good. Mission Impossible 2, John Woo, he's just amazing. I really love his work, and honestly, like, I wanted to put this movie much higher on this list, but I can't because the other ones are just so damn good as well. You know, I mean, just amazing stuff John Woo does. You know, I love him to death. I love his movies to death. He's just a genius when it comes to making action. And then Rogue Nation at number 3, just because, you know, some of it kind of, it slows down a little bit there. I feel like we miss out because it's the only movie, Rogue Nation takes place over the longest amount of time. Most of the movies take place over a couple of days, a week. This one goes, you know, we have the opening sequence, with the plane, and then, you know, stuff, and then we jump forward 6 months in time, and I feel left out, you know, because I think that, I feel like that 6 months would have just, like, I'm sure that's 6 months of Ethan Hunt just on the run, completely alone by himself, would have been amazing. I mean, that would have just been amazing, you know, but what are you gonna do? Ghost Protocol comes in at number 2. Just because, again, like I said in the previous episode, that's just, to me, one of the most truly impossible missions, of any movie of its type, you know, the action, spy, thriller, whatever. And it's just so watchable, you know. I can watch that movie just over and over again. There's something about it that's just, that's just really, really watchable. The replay value just does not diminish for me at all with that movie. And then Fallout at number 1 for pretty much all the reasons I just named in this segment. it's just incredible. You know, it blows my mind. Tom Cruise is just, he's just on another level. You know, he's amazing. But hey, that's gonna do it. That's gonna be our show for tonight. That wraps up this week's series. Thank you so much for listening. Please tune in to our morning show with Heath. Check out our other social media content at Mungami Players on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, and YouTube. And guess what? We've been working on something for a while, and we got something new coming up for you sometime in the future. I just wanted to tease it a little bit, really tease you a little bit about it. So look forward to that. You might, if you do go onto our social media sites, you may have noticed some changes in, say, the banners. So we got something coming up for you pretty soon, which is going to be freaking awesome. Thanks again so much for stopping by for a nightcap. Good night.